Hello and welcome to the Game Theory Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Vecini. We are presented by The Athletic. Today on the show, good friend of the program, Matt Penny, is here. We're going to chat all about guards in the 2022 NBA draft. But first, Penny, we have to talk about Boston sports and how I'm now apparently just like diving into Boston sports.
This is
life now, unfortunately for me.
It's so good. And I've slowly been peppering you for Boston sports. And I feel like the tide's turned a little bit on Red Sox fans and fandom because they break the curse and it was kind of viewed as not an evil empire, but this kind of juggernaut. And now it's becoming not America's team, but it feels more of like a weird feel-good story. So just to let people in a little bit, when I was at Fenway for that wild card plan, I sent Sam a picture and I said, just so you know what I'm walking into, I sent a picture of a guy changing his shirt on the side of the road because he's putting a jersey on. And people do that all the time normally, but this guy just like did it and was like in between shirts, like holding the other one. I just tried to tell Sam, like, this is Boston. I hope you embrace our friendship because this is what I live with on a daily basis here.
Well, I feel like there are a lot of similarities between Boston and Pittsburgh in that way. Like, you get a lot of the same people, let's go with. And apparently, I've been made aware that while there have been like a million Boston shows over the years, there have not been many Pittsburgh shows. There's a new Pittsburgh show on Showtime called American Rust, which I watched the first half of the first episode. I'm pretty sure I'm in. Like, I'll watch the whole thing and get back to people. I'll probably be like 100% in. It has Jeff Daniels. It has Maura Tierney. Like, it's a big show, right? I'm excited that we get to like share that commonality of I don't even know what to call it. Like, what do you how do you phrase it? Like, is it like it's a certain kind of white people, really, and particularly like white men?
It's like that. Pittsburgh and Boston. There's plenty of those in Boston. Yes, there's plenty of that. We checked that box.
it's a certain kind. So, you know, I'm glad to pick up Boston as the Boston Red Sox, but I got to be honest, like, the whole reason we're picking up the Red Sox here is that they just, like, got super drunk after the ALDS, Dancing on My Own by Robin.
Yes, the remix, and the T.A. Stowe remix. It's a great song, and I couldn't hear it when they were first doing it. I'm like, I don't think they're doing this, are they? And sure they were.
No, we're all in on the Boston Red Sox dancing to Robin. It's Robin. Like, I don't give a shit about like Tiesto remixes now.
I don't either. But that's the remix. I don't know who you credit for that type of stuff. But it is those kind of feel good moments that you see in the locker room where they could really be singing or dancing to anything. And they did sing to J-Rock Win afterwards, so they bounced it out a little bit. But Robin was their roots. They started with Robin. That was what drove them to prominence.
Yeah. Any time that you can see a group of like burly like baseball players just jamming to Robin. I mean, who amongst us hasn't like gotten drunk with their friends and like sang Robin?
Oh,
like, come on now.
It's that or the solo drive by yourself and keep on like slowly turning it up a little bit more. But you're like kind of looking around if you're like driving through the suburbs. Like, is anyone else noticing that I'm doing this? That was somewhere at UMass for UMass lacrosse. The bars couldn't play Don't Stop Believing because they would act like they just won, I don't know, the World Cup or whatever, in lacrosse, and just be beers everywhere and a disaster, and they'd have to like clean up the whole place. So that was on like the do not playlist. Do not play Don't Stop Believing ever.
Wait, what was the like big college song when you were in college?
Like
people would like sing at the bar.
It was so kind of like cyclical. There wasn't one that I'm like, that's like the song. There really wasn't.
Yeah. The one that like stands out, because like Call Me Maybe came out like right when I was in college.
Ooh, yes.
Like right like 21, 22 years old, like going to the bar like in the afternoon with my friends, like that had to be it. And just like looking back, I mean, that's the one that sounds ridiculous, right?
It is. It was right after me. But I do remember Partying the USA being a movement. That was like a real thing where everyone just kind of like drops the gloves and says, this is the song that's going to unite us all. Don't care who's watching me sing. Like, this is the one.
Yeah. I feel like we all have those songs in college, unfortunately. But instead of reminiscing about our college days, let's talk about the college days of some other NBA prospects here. We'll talk about the Red Sox at the end, because I know that you want to talk about the Red Sox and your excitement about a Boston sports team finally having a chance to win a title again.
I know.
It's been a long time. Right?
Long time.
It's been a while. So, what do we think of this guard class? It feels like the one group of players where there are a lot of potential options that could be really good, and like a lot of them. Like, I can see like a group of, honestly, like there are probably 40 guys where I'm like, okay, if this guy turns into a draftable prospect, like I would not be blown away by that by any stretch. But I also am concerned that there isn't a lot of high-end talent in terms of this guard class.
Not a ton of superstars. That was kind of what stood out for me too. As we sent names back and forth about who to talk about. There's just a lot of similar pieces. There's a lot of guys that are similar height wise and similar stylistically, and maybe more scorers than actually point guards and facilitators. So it's a deep class for guards and numbers, but I don't think it's very deep in terms of like superstar caliber type guys. At the top of the draft, there'll be a couple, but there is also a drop-off similar to the wings where you get past the first few, and it's hard to really project where a lot of these guys will be, because there's guys who could make jumps where I think we're anticipating, and then some we don't even really know about yet. And that's what the beauty of actually playing the games and not doing all these preseason awards we see coming out, and you know, Remy Martin's preseason player of the year. It's like he transferred. He hasn't even played a game yet. So there's still a lot of things to figure out.
That's one of the funniest awards. Like, I saw Mark Titus tweet Remy Martin continuing to fill that preseason like trophy case or whatever with another one. Like, when are we gonna talk about the fact that like Remy Martin is not awesome?
I didn't know we're going there. He's a volume shooter, a volume scorer. It doesn't make sense. That one's like kind of whatever. Like, preseason player of the year. He's SEC preseason player of the year, whatever. But like the preseason freshman of the year, that one never makes sense to me. Okay, it's the highest ranked recruit. Like, what metrics are we using for this?
No, this is the funniest one. So Remy Martin is the Big 12 preseason player of the year, which is like laughable from a talent perspective. Like, I don't think Remy Martin's a top 50 player in college basketball even. Did you notice who the Big 12 newcomer of the year was?
I didn't. I argued with a friend about who was on the first team, but I don't know who the newcomer was.
It was Marcus Carr. So Remy Martin, who is a newcomer to the Big 12, is the Big 12 preseason player of the year.
My guess was Musa Cisse, who's like another one. Yeah, newcomer of the year. Nothing makes sense. These guys are all transfers. They haven't been there. They're in all different conferences, and that's fine. Like, the transfer portal's not going away. That's fine. But we can't give him preseason player of the year. It's like the Big East coaches when they stonewalled James Bouknight last year. Like, no, he's not first team. You weren't in this league. But I don't know. It seems like the Big 12 with open arms. Like, give us everybody. We'll give you all the awards.
Yeah. What are we doing here? What are we doing here, Matt Penny? That's always my question. Let's kind of dive in. So I guess that I have two guys where I'm like, okay, I think these two are definite top 20 picks. One of them I'd be pretty surprised if he wasn't a lottery pick. I think that there's just a very real like duo at the top that I feel most comfortable with, and they're both named Jaden. Yes. Hardy and Jaden Ivey. Mm-hmm. So let's start with Jaden Hardy, because he's the guy that almost everyone seems to have ranked in the top five, right? Including myself. Like, I have him at fifth right now. What is it about Jaden Hardy that you are most excited about? And what about Jaden Hardy's game do you think is most translatable to the NBA?
The way he scores, he's certainly wired to score. At 6'4", if he gets a sliver of space, he's getting a shot off. and the makes he makes are pure. There's shooter's bounces. There's no bounce around the rim. There's swishes. And I love the form. I love his setup to the catch. He tucks his elbow. It's a high release. Has really, really deep range. And he can get himself open in different ways, whether it's off the bounce or off screens. So that's the exciting part for me. And even more so, like, there's some untapped athleticism too. Like, he has some bounce and he has some stuff at the rim, but he's become such a strong shooter that he more relied on that this year, and his range is like volleyball line range. Like, in the gym, he's pulling up and shooting. And what kind of sticks out most to me is when you're at a program like the G League Ignite, and you're going to be in NBA sets right away. And we saw kind of the development almost from the first week with a guy like Jalen Green, who's a similar type of position, that he's going to be in that same developmental type program, that I'm enthused that he could kind of be on that upward trajectory of adding more things and not just settling into being a jump shooter.
Yeah, so definitely very jump shot heavy, but in a similar way to Cam Thomas last year, where I don't really care what the percentages right now say. And from what I gather and have kind of been told, the percentages with Jaden Hardy have not been particularly strong over the course of his career. But I think that he can just shoot. Like, he takes a lot of contested shots, and that brings the percentage down. But you look at the jumper, you look at his comfort getting it off, you look at the rhythm throughout it. I have very little in the way of worries that he's going to be able to shoot, right? Like, you feel that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely
shooting. Yeah. And particularly what I like about him is that he can get his shot off from a variety of different angles, from a variety of different footworks. He can go, you know, pull, it's almost always off of pull-ups. Like, he can go left, right, into a foul line jumper pull up. He can go right, left plant into like an 18 foot left baseline jumper, right? Like, any sort of footwork that he needs to get a shot off, and he does elevate with that jumper to get it off from a variety of angles. I think he's going to be able to shoot it. Like, to me, he's going to win by being like Bradley Beal. Right? Like, that's how he has to win. He has to win by continuing to up his craft off the bounce. And he is crafty off the bounce. Like, I really like his change of pace. I think he keeps the handle tight to the ground. Like, he's pretty good. I don't know if he's quite as shifty as what Bradley Beal has become, but that's how he has to win long term. And I think we'll see if he can do that, basically. And if he can bring enough to the table to where it's okay, or maybe he just brings so much as a scorer that it doesn't matter, but can he bring enough to the table to give him some margin for error as a scorer as well?
And want him to be a little bit more of a facilitator and make others around him better. He played with Frankie Collins at Coronado High School in Nevada. Frankie's now at Michigan. He wasn't relied on to really be this offensive maestro, if you will, to set up other players. He's just kind of getting his, but he can pass a little bit, and he can play the one and the two. I want him to pick his spots a little bit better within the flow of the offense on when to pull. But again, like the hesitations we had with Jalen Green, these are the same exact kind of red flags. And I don't remember watching the G League games last year and saying beyond the first game or two, like, oh, that wasn't really like the shot there. Like, he'll settle into what he has, like an NBA approach and like a bag of moves, like you said, like the slow down to speed up. He doesn't just go a million miles per hour. Very nuanced in the way he kind of approaches screens and set up ball screens. So it's going to continue to expand too. And that's what I'm hoping that we see early in the season from him too.
Well, here's what I'll say too. Like, Jalen Green as an athlete just has way more margin for error than what Jaden Hardy does. Right. Like, Jaden Hardy, who will play for the Ignite this year. I think that Matt mentioned it in passing, but I didn't necessarily mention it. He's an okay athlete. Like, I don't think he's a wildly explosive athlete, which again is why I kind of bring up the name Bradley Beal, because, you know, Brad is not a wild athlete. But I think that that again is how Jaden Hardy is going to have to win. He's going to have to win through, I guess, what is the term I'm looking for here? Through craftiness and through all sorts of different shiftiness and different ways to get defenders off balance, as opposed to Jalen Green, who can just kind of explode in and out of moves and right. is so explosive. Like, even just on something as simple as a step back, like, Jalen Green creates more separation going backward on his step back than what Jaden Hardy does, because Jaden Hardy just isn't that level of explosive, right?
No, and Jalen Green can get away with some of those things because he can take off the air and he can readjust his body twice before you've done it once and extend and finish at the rim and turn his hand over and dunk. Those are kind of the differences between those two guys. I'm also curious if... I think for you and I, we bumped them later, but a guy like Cam Thomas, who's similar size and shot it a lot in college, he did. I wonder if kind of his success early in the summer league and early in the preseason changes any notions on these high-volume shooting, scoring-type guards, where clearly it's already working. I know preseason isn't the same thing as a regular season, but he's not having a problem getting a shot off and scoring at a high clip.
Yeah, and again, with Cam, like, I don't think anyone had that worry either. No. It was more, how does everything else look? Like, Cam Thomas has been an elite scorer at every single level, and Jaden Hardy has been that as well. He's right. been an elite scorer at every single level. He hasn't been quite as elite statistically as what Cam Thomas was, but it's pretty close at the end of the day, and Jaden's game is a little bit more well-rounded. Like, he's not a total negative defensively. He's not a total negative as a ball handler and not as a ball handler, I'm sorry, but as a decision maker and passer. So again, he already has more room for error than what Cam Thomas is, but I think you might be right. Like, you might be correct that the league might be more willing to take a risk on some of these guys that are, that just have so much in their bag already as a scorer and can create that way. Even if they are deficient in certain other parts of their game, because Jaden Hardy right now is not yet like an NBA average passer and distributor and decision maker for what his role will be in the NBA. He's not yet a league average defender for what his role will be in the NBA. So we'll see what happens with Jaden Hardy. Like, I am really excited to see what he looks like in the G League. I would expect points.
There will be points. Yes, there will be blood. There will be points. He's at the very least a very strong two-level scorer right now. If he can really add some more to his finishing package, I think that would help his case anyway to be in that discussion for that top 3 to 5 guys.
Okay, let's go to Jaden Ivey now, who's a 6'4 guard at Purdue. A little bit more athletic, in my opinion, than what Jaden Hardy is. More questions on the jumper, though, and I don't necessarily know that there are the similar questions as a passer, but it's probably pretty close. Like, they're definitely both more on the scoring side of the ledger than the distribution side.
Yeah, it's sort of still a head scratch for me, because he came on late in the NCAA season and he had that 26-point performance when Purdue was knocked out of the tournament by North Texas. And then he had a good summer. He won a gold medal with Team USA, U19. Had 16 points in championship game versus France. He was second on the team in scoring, named the all-tournament team. But last year, he was a sub 40% shooter from the field, barely, 39.9, 26% from three. His form isn't bad. It's pretty compact. He goes straight up and down, but he just needs to shoot it for me to really get on board. Like, I'm not worried about him getting paint touches. I'm in on his first step. He's pretty dexterous around the rim. He moves well away from the ball. How much of a jump is his shooting going to take? Is he going to be a 34% shooter? Are we going to try to like sell ourselves if he's still around that 30%? Like, what's it really going to take?
So this is where I think having the knowledge of his high school numbers is important, because Jaden Ivey was a consistent 40% three-point shooter in high school. Like, all 3 years, his last 2 years at... Is it Marion in Indiana, mm-hmm. if I remember correctly? And his final year at La Lu, he was a 40% three-point shooter. And to me, that says quite a bit in terms of just there being a lot of upside for his jump shot. Like, I don't think it's broken by any stretch. He had a couple games last year. Like, go back and watch the game against Ohio State. Like, that dude caught fire and made like 4 or 5 threes against Ohio State, and they got to the point where it was like, okay, we're leaving him open. We're much more worried about him driving to, oh no, we gotta close out on this dude. He's gonna can well, a three in the second half if we don't, right?
Yeah, and that's the next dimension. And it was a small number. He only took 97 threes last year. He's 25 for 97. So we don't want to overreact, I guess, completely on the whole season. We don't want to overreact completely on a single game. But there does need to be stuff there. I mean, the high school numbers are great, but that line's a little bit closer. You're a lot more comfortable playing there than you are on the road at Ohio State or other places in the Big Ten. Purdue's going to be really, really good, and he's going to have plenty of opportunities to show it. I knew that he kind of like danced a little bit with the draft last year. I wasn't as high as some people were, and just not as high going into the preseason, I guess. I know he's going to have a great season, but there's still pieces to his game that I want to see get a little bit better before I throw him in that kind of lottery talk.
Yeah, and I would like to see him become more comfortable as a distributor consistently as well. Like, he seems to, instead of take what comes to him, he's a guy that does more of the, okay, I'm going to shift into distribution mode. Okay, I'm going to shift into scoring mode, as opposed to melding the two together in a real way that I think is really important for an NBA lead guard. So, or even like a combo guard at the NBA level. So that's where I'm a little bit worried right now on Jaden Hardy more than anything.
And he has that with the first step, too. It's like he can beat his guy, but it's a great point. It's like you have to be able to mesh those worlds together where if a guy rotates up, you're able to still see in the corner and not try to jump and finish at the rim every single time.
Yeah, totally. Let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll go to the freshman class, because the freshman class is could be really good, could be not good at all. I think there's a lot to kind of lay out there. Okay, we're back. Interesting freshman class. I have six names that I want to talk about from this group that I think have potential to be legit, like one and done, high level players this year. We're going to include John Montero in here because he is playing for Overtime Elite. He's been playing over in Europe for a couple years, if I remember correctly. He's from the Dominican Republic, right?
Yes.
And very creative, like one of the most fun bits of tape to watch for any player in this NBA draft. Like, his ability to get in and out of his handle and into his pull-up game is ridiculous. I don't know if he can do anything else right now.
He fills it up. Like, he really, really scores it.
Yeah, like, to me, it's like a better version of Trey Mann. Is like kind of the way I'm thinking of it right now.
I mean, right now, and when I watch the tape, and I haven't seen him in person, I was also drawn to those kind of situational scoring instincts he had. Like, he's going to attack different defenders in different ways based on their size and coverage, and then he'll pull it from three, and he can push it the next time down the court, or then he can get to his floater. He can finish with both hands. He plays out a pick and roll, and he's done it at every level that he's played at, and he's with that Gran Canaria B team, and turn heads as a younger player on U16 and U17 of the FIBA. It's he can score, and he's advanced in those kind of like weird off leg awkward finishes in traffic. Beyond that, I'm with you. I don't know really what else to do with him, and I know just based on Overtime and what they are and their structure, he's gonna score a lot too. I don't know what the development will look like there.
Yeah, like, really needs to improve as a distributor and passer, really needs to improve as a defender. Like, where he is right now, the upside exists for him to be like a borderline starting caliber guard if he continues to improve his overall craft as a scorer and shooter. And frankly, like, for lead guards, like, you can make a case that the ability to separate and get to your pull-up game is the most important skill right now in the NBA. But there's just a lot there that he needs to continue to work on, in my opinion, to get to the point where he is going to be a legitimate option as a potential starting NBA guard. Like, right now, the upside is like the upside is low-level starter, but I think the most likely outcome is probably, like, backup guard, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's that's telling as an early read here or an ominous sign for the draft that a lot of places have him slotted mid-first, and we're saying, I don't know if he starts. And there's drafts in the past where we're getting to the 20s. We're saying he's got a chance. So there is a dip. And then for the team that he's on for Overtime Elite, they divided him into threes. He's on the same team as Jayzion Gortman, who's another kind of fast push-it guard. That being said, I kind of envision the two of those guys taking turns as scoring off the ball, playing combo, playing the lead guard. So he'll have different looks and the opportunity to kind of show that he's willing and able to pass and not always get buckets.
Yeah, we're in on the Jayzion Gortman experience, right?
Oh, I am. Yeah. Yeah, I like him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he's one of the guys on the, like, OTE team that I've now watched, and I'm like, oh, he actually might have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of my favorite guys on that roster. There's a lot of names, and a lot of guys are just like, whatever, but I really like him.
Yeah, like, that's one where I've watched him, and I just kind of get it in terms of the athleticism and the ability to play like as a lead guard. Like, that could actually really just work at the NBA level. Okay, next up is a group of three SEC freshman guards: Kennedy Chandler, Ty Washington, JD Davison. Which one do you want to go with first?
Let's start with Kennedy Chandler.
Okay, so about 6'1", 165 pounds. And it's just really hard to win at the NBA level being that size. And that, frankly, is going to turn some NBA teams off just like immediately because, again, it is almost impossible to win at the NBA level consistently at that size. So, how good is Kennedy Chandler that, like, I still have him as a first-round pick. I think that you probably, going into the year, would consider him a first-round pick. Like, how does he overcome that size?
Well, he's at Tennessee. I'll start with that. And you're playing for Rick Barnes, and their standards for getting on the court and defending and staying out there, which I think he'll meet. This is a little bit lazy, but he's had this for a while. This, you're a little bit small, but he's at 6'1". He's a winner. He's a state runner-up in Tennessee before he left there to finish out at Sunrise Christian. He is a two-time Mr. Basketball. He won a Peach Jam championship. He was 21-4 at Sunrise Academy. They made the Geico National Championship, McDonald's All-American, gold with Team USA. So he's kind of had these things against him, and I know you could throw that out the window when you start talking about the NBA stuff. He's going to have to rely more on his speed and kind of what he does in the open court, more so than the half court, because when you get in the half court, like you said, you can just get exposed being smaller like that. You have to have this like extreme skill or separator that makes you so much better, and they can keep you out there defensively too and not get exposed. He does have deep range on a shot when his feet are set, but I wouldn't necessarily say he's a shooter. I do like it that he wants the ball in his hands with the game on the line. He's not afraid of the big moment. He showed that the high school level, he showed that with Team USA. I know all this stuff sounds very non-committal, but I can't stamp him yet as a lottery pick, and I can't stamp him yet as saying he's a top 20 guy, simply just based on history. And if we're playing the numbers, it's hard at that size to be a no-brainer top 10, top 15 guy.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I like all of the traits that you said. Like, he knows how to manage a game. Like we just kind of talked about with Jaden Ivey, he's a kind of player that hasn't really figured out how to mesh the distribution aspect of his game with the scoring aspect. Kennedy Chandler knows exactly how to do both and can do both at the same, on the same possession. Mm-hmm. Like it's simple for him. Like he just has that innate basketball sense. He has great court vision. Like he can make, I don't want to say every pass off of a live dribble, but like he can make a lot of high level passing reads, and like he knows how to get into the middle of the court and then collapse the defense, and has that poise and patience to be able to make plays off of that. Different player than the Jaden Springer Keon Johnson duo that was there last year, and a different player that I think is more likely to earn the trust of Rick Barnes early in his career because of his basketball sense and his just inherent knowledge of making the right play.
Yes.
Right?
He'll have the keys early, because there was times last year, too, when Rick Barnes was hesitant with Santiago Viscovi as your point guard who can score, but he can be looser at times. And Kenny Chandler's more of the guy, like, get me the ball, take a breath at half court, let's set up the pick and roll. I'm only going to shoot if the guy goes under, but if not, if he hard hedges, recover slow, he's going to skip it opposite, hit the big that's wide open the dunker spot. Like, he sees all the options on the court. And as a coach, that kind of like puts you at peace and puts you at ease, whereas last year you didn't really know with Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer. There's games that are going to have 25 each. Games are going to disappear. Like, I don't think, regardless of what he is as a pro, I don't think Kenny Chandler is ever going to be like invisible on the court. That's just not who he is.
Well, and here's what my worry is on Kennedy Chandler. It's he's 6 foot one, you know, 165, 170 pounds, whatever we want to call him, right? How much do we buy the shot? Because ultimately, that's going to be the number one thing. Like, I feel pretty good when he's pulling up from mid-range. I don't know how good I feel about him, like, stepping it out from three right now consistently.
It just depends. If his feet are set, I'm fine with it. Ball reversal, I'm fine with it. If a guy goes under the pick and roll and he kind of has that extra half a second to get set as opposed to going off the bounce, I'm okay. But movement stuff from three, it's just not there yet. It's not. And that's why, like, I take pause, because we saw a guy like Sharif Cooper, who's just unbelievable out of the pick and roll, and the vision and the reads that he makes, too, still comes back to the shooting. Shot it well for a game or two in summer league, but if you don't do it all the time, it's just hard to keep you out on the floor in the NBA.
Yeah, and you know, Sharif Cooper is a guy who I think is a live dribble passer, like the passing that really translates in and out of sets in NBA settings. I think he's pretty severely ahead of where Kennedy is right now. So, yeah, like I'm like not even totally convinced that Kennedy Chandler is a first round pick yet. He could earn that. Like, he definitely could earn that throughout the year and prove himself. That would not surprise me at all, just given the mentality, the basketball IQ, the court sense, like all of that. Like, I would totally buy that. But the tools just aren't kind of there, and that makes it really, really hard when the tools aren't there.
I feel like he's at least listening to the right people, though, because the FIBA stuff this summer, he did rely much more on his jumper in international play than he did kind of domestically here, where he can really get in the lane and really slice up defenses off the bounce in high school. But you could tell he started to kind of mold his game to the way the FIBA style is, and hit some jumpers. I think he averaged 7.7 points per game, so he's not hard-headed that he thinks he's going to play this one style and that's going to take him to the next level.
Yeah, totally. I agree with all that. Okay, let's go to Ty Washington next. So, not a crazy explosive athlete, but is bigger at 6'3". What do we want to call Ty? Like 190 pounds, 200 pounds?
Yeah, say 190. I think he's quite 200.
Yeah, I would say that's probably right. So, when I watch Ty, I think tremendous shooter, really, really good passer, like sees all of the passes on the court consistently in a way that you need to in order to be successful whenever you don't win on explosiveness, right? Because his first step is not great. He's not an explosive athlete. I even think his handle is just okay in terms of creativity. Like, he has a tight handle and he has good footwork. Like, he's good once he picks the ball up and can Euro step and can do some different little poise moves. Like, he doesn't get flustered with the ball. But it's hard to win as a lead guard when you're not crazy explosive. Like, I've seen the name Chauncey Billups come up with him, and like that's how he has to win. He has to win by being like a Chauncey Billups type who uses his physicality. And oh, by the way, like Ty Washington does have like that similar post game, by the way, to what Chauncey Billups had. It's just that how often are NBA teams going to post him up in the NBA as a 6'3" guard? He'll do it in mismatches, but it's just harder to find those mismatches now in the NBA where it's going to be a legitimate advantage for him. So really interesting player. I've heard great things coming out of Kentucky so far, teams that have seen his practice and all that stuff, but just have some questions, I think, still about how does he win as a lead guard at the NBA level? It might have to be next to another lead guard where he's a great shooter and a great decision maker and passer, and he ends up turning into a great defender. We'll just have to see, I think.
And Chauncey Billups was in Boston briefly as a pro. And when you pull up his stats, too, Chauncey Billups shot almost 40% from three for his career. I don't think yep. that's what Ty. He is also sort of this late bloomer in that he was committed to go to Creighton, decommitted, went to Kentucky, and he spearheaded the Arizona Compass Prep team out in Arizona, obviously, but to the number one spot in the country during that season, which just hadn't been done before. So there is something in that. He has a very good in-between game. He knows how to get his points, but there's not like a foolproof thing that this is his move. He's 6'3", so he's not a jumbo guard. He's not really a jet off the dribble, but kind of gets where he needs to. So I don't know what to do with him from that perspective either, because you're going to have to pair him next to another, I'd say, probably bigger guard in the NBA, because you're not going to guard twos at 6'3". I don't necessarily think he's a point guard.
I will say this. Like, I think he might be able to deal with some twos once he gets strong. Like, once he, like, fills out his body more. Like, he's big enough and strong enough in terms of frame to where he might be able to deal with some twos.
I'm sold as him as a very good college player. Just have to see how it is against the Monsters and the SEC and how he fares. And that'll kind of give us, hopefully, enough clues. And Kentucky has a treasure trove of options in the backcourt that kind of pair him with. Like, do you play him with Sevier Wheeler, who's smaller, and then he's at two at 6'3", that's fine. Play with Kellen Grady, who's kind of similar size. So how he matches up outside of the high school setting will give us a little bit more of indicators of what it could look like. I was just surprised. I know he's on the late kind of rocket ship of the prospect. Nobody wants to get wrong because he got good late. But I've still been surprised that his name kind of pops up middle first right now, because I don't know the translation. It's not one of these no-brainers where, like, Jane Hardy's going to score. He's 6'4". He shoots it from outer space. Like, it's fine. Like, that's going to work. I'm not saying it doesn't work with Ty. I just don't know how it works.
Well, I think that the key here is something we've talked about a lot in this series of podcasts. Like, who do you rank over him?
Yeah.
On some level, right? Yeah. Like, that's really it. Like, who do you rank over him right now? And I don't have an answer to that once you get within the top 20, right? Like, or once you get outside of the top 20, I'm sorry. It's just hard to find the guys. Like, it's really hard.
Our list is 50 guys from 20 and down. We've made that joke before, too. Like, you can't have a lottery grade on 60 guys. We don't have that. I feel last year, for a while, there was a lot of guys really in that top 10 that are just elbowing each other, and the players just, for this point in time today on October, whatever it is, there hasn't been that. And games start soon enough. In a few weeks, the countdown is actually on. Until then, we're just kind of moving around chairs.
Yeah, it's hard to find enough guys.
Well, there's enough guys. We'll talk 100 plus when we're done, and I'm sure we missed a half dozen that'll get drafted. But I don't know how to rank them. I'll be completely honest, and I spent a lot of this time this offseason rewatching tons of tape. Thank you, Synergy. There's not a lot else out to do out there, even the FIBA stuff, but it's still, I still, there wasn't any of these things or hints that I said, you know what, we missed that. Jaden Ivey's fifth in the draft. Hard stop. Like, that's the guy. Ben Mathurin, that's the guy. Ty Washington, he's 12th. I don't feel confident in any of these takes yet.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, I want to be clear about that.
Please keep
like,
listening. No, we'll faith. Get better with time.
It's just hard to come up with names. It's hard to come up with names right now. It's hard to come up with names that you feel confident in.
That's what it is.
At this point in draft season. So with Ty, I think that what you got at, like, how does Kentucky play? I think that's actually kind of a credit to him, and it's something that could translate to the NBA. Like, I'd feel pretty okay playing him next to Sevier Wheeler and Kellen Grady. I feel pretty okay playing him next to Kellen Grady and like three, four, like wings and forwards, right? I think that you can play him at the one or the two, and his skill set is versatile enough as a shooter and passer to where it just, like, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, he'll make it work. He's scalable off ball.
Yes.
Like, that's something I'm writing about right now. Like, I think that the breakout players article that I'm writing for The Athletic probably will be out by the time this goes live, because I think this is going to go live on Friday. I'm writing about Darius Garland, and I think Darius Garland has an incredibly scalable game from having spent so many years playing off ball in high school and in AAU. Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't really become a point guard until he was, what, like a junior in high school, realistically? Mm-hmm. So I kind of think that Ty Washington has a very scalable game to playing both on and off the ball. If anything, I'm more worried about him playing on the ball, because I'm just worried about the separation that he can get from NBA level length and talent. Like, that might not work, but I think he's going to be really good this year. Yeah, like, I think he's going to be really, really effective for Kentucky this year.
He'll find his way on the court, and they're not the same, and don't take this so literally, but I felt that way on Keldon Johnson out of high school too. I didn't really know like what his position was, but I knew I wanted him out there. And that's how I feel about Ty. You want him out there, he'll figure out. It's sort of like that internet sensation from a few months ago. Is he a basketball player or is he a hooper? Like, he's a hooper. He's going to go out there and he'll be fine. Like, he's going to help win you games. He did it in high school. He'll do it in college. I just don't know what the position will be if and when the next level comes along.
Okay. The final SEC point guard here is JD Davison. I would say JD Davison is the one that we have the most questions on right now. NBA scouts who have been down there to Alabama have also had some questions so far. Not in terms of the overall talent, just in terms of, is it going to be like, is he a one and done or not? Like, they totally buy the athleticism. Like, the guy can live in the paint, and he's 6'3" and he's, just like a ridiculous athlete. Like, his leaping ability is real, but it's just, he came from like small town Alabama and hasn't played a crazy amount of super high level basketball yet. Like, even by high school standards, he has not played like a high level of basketball yet. So the questions that scouts have raised for me, and I think they're reasonable, are just simply, can he shoot, which has always been a question with him? How comfortable is the jump shot? And second, how comfortable is he going to be running an offense when the jump in competition level is just going to be really, really high for him from day one?
And when the court's cut in half, and you're in the half court, because he has played so much up and down. He's from a very small town. And you're right, he just hasn't had the reps, the repetitions of playing a large number of bigger time games, because like, he went to a grassroots tryout to play on his team in the Nike UIBL. Like, that's unheard of for a kid like this, just because no one really knew about him. And he has this super explosiveness, like highlight level, highlight reel jumps off the fast break. And if he gets a step, he's going to try to take off and jump. He's an energy guy, really, on both ends, and another sort of late riser. I actually like his vision. And he can pull up a little bit when his man does go under screens. The shot is a little bit flat. He's great on the break. He just needs to make an impact and make basketball plays when the game is actually played slower. And we know how fast Alabama likes to play. We know how many threes they want to take up. But when the dimensions of the court change and it's not a track meet, how's he able to make his imprint on the game? That's always been my concern with him once he gets to college level.
Which, by the way, it's going to be really interesting to compare and contrast him and Kennedy Chandler this year, I think, right?
Yeah, very different.
Because Kennedy Chandler is a lot of the stuff that JD Davison isn't. JD Davison is a lot of stuff in terms of tools that Kennedy Chandler just doesn't have yet. I would venture Kennedy Chandler has a more successful season this year than JD Davison. I would venture that JD Davison, if it hits, I mean, that guy's upside is just higher because he's 6'3". He's a real athlete. Like, he has real vision. He can distribute. Like, there's just enough there. And playing in Alabama's offense is going to help him long term. Again, though, I just wonder if he's a two-year player, not a one-year player.
Yeah, it could be. You kind of have my brain spinning a little bit because you're absolutely right. Like, if you we say this a lot. I said if you combined Usman Garuba and Alperen Şengün, it's a perfect five. And now you're talking about, like, the perfect point guard in the SEC. Like, you have the explosiveness. You have his floor general. Knows how to play and make the right reads. It also could be a situation where if they both go pro, Kenny Chandler could have a better season statistically and more minutes played. And you just have these tiny pockets and windows of the JD Davison experience, and scouts just can't pass on him for a guy who's maybe a little bit smaller, just hoping that it does hit. And then all of a sudden you have this crazy explosive two-way guard who hasn't played a lot of basketball. You take some time to develop him, and maybe it hits what you need to be a couple of years down the road.
Yeah, I was talking to an NBA executive on the phone earlier this week, and one thing that we kind of brought up was the idea of comparing kind of the NBA landscape to startups and people that, like, live in the startup world and, like, startup investors. Startup investors will invest in companies, not like they're going to fail probably 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10, right? But the goal is to hit the one that can, like, 50x or 100x your money, not to find the one that will just, like, 3x your money because you feel like it's, you know, a little bit, right? The goal here in many ways is variance. Like, you want to find that high level variance and you want to find that high level upside. JD Davison has that if it works long term in comparison to someone like Kennedy Chandler, in my opinion.
Oh, it's 100x. We'll just see. If it hits. It's 100x. Right? But yeah. You also have to balance that, and it's a great analogy. Number one, where are you drafting? And then number two, how hot is your seat as a front office, as a general manager? You can take those kind of chances, albeit maybe a little bit more calculated, if we're drafting 32 or we're drafting 46. It's like, all right, let's just take, like, a wild swing and see if it pans out. If you do that at 10 and you miss, people are going to call you crazy. Like, you might not have a job. But late first, if you got nothing to lose, if you're a contender, if it's, okay, worst case, he's the 10th man in a championship culture on the end of the bench, fine. It's where do you take the risk? Like, how deep are you willing to jump before you cut your own cord, I guess?
See, like, this is the Poku discussion all over again, right? Because if it's me, like, I think you take the guy that has a chance to genuinely change your franchise. Like, Poku might not be good. Like, he's been terrible in the preseason so far. I don't know if you've watched any of Oklahoma City yet.
Don't tell our friends on Down to Dunk, please.
Yeah. Sorry, Schleck. We love you.
They go nuts. Thunder fans go so hard, man. I love it. Thunder Twitter is insane. I just got a taste of it this year.
Best.
They crowned Josh Giddey, like, the king after one preseason game. I think he was a bust in the summer league because he got hurt. Now he's the king. And now he played another preseason game. He was fine. And they're like, guys, taking his lumps. He's a rookie. It's like, the swings you guys are taking are insane. And I love it. I encourage it. Just when I'm scrolling, I can't believe this thing is actually happening.
Oh, my God. It's the best. By the way, just going to throw out there, I may or may not have placed a little wager tonight against the Oklahoma City Thunder preseason team.
What?
May have been there. Okay. Oklahoma City, like, have you watched either of their two preseason games?
Let me think. I don't think I have. No, I've watched the Raptors about 25 times. I don't know how they're always on TV on League Pass. I don't think I've watched Oklahoma City yet, though.
It looks bad. Like, they're really, really bad so far. Like, genuinely horrible in both the preseason games so far. And Denver is, like, treating this as a, like, dry run, it looks like. Like, they started all of Jokic, Porter, Aaron Gordon, Will Barton, Monte Morris, like Bones has played 9 minutes. Campazzo is playing. Like everyone outside of Jamichael Green, I think, is playing tonight. Oklahoma City's up 5. we gotta come back a little bit.
That's the way it is. It's a close loop a little bit on the Poku thing. So I'm just looking. So he was drafted, what, 17th?
16, I believe.
So, like, you look at the guys after him, right? I just think that, like, that shot was worth taking. Josh Green, Sadiq Bey. Sadiq Bey's been good. Precious Chua. Okay, if you want to take a swing.
But you know what, though? Like, that's the thing that I'm talking about, though. Like, Sadiq Bey does look great. Like, that's a great pick for Detroit. Sadiq Bey's, like, going to be a starter, right? Like, how much is Sadiq Bey genuinely going to change the trajectory of your franchise? Not that much. I mean, like, you can Sadiq Bey, find so Sadiq Bey.
Poku was 17. Yeah, Sadiq Bey was 19. Poku can change. I'm just scrolling here. Like, Tyrese Maxey's been good. RJ Hampton's a little bit later. So my point is, like, you didn't take... Yeah, friends of the program, Malachi Flynn and Desmond Bane have been great. You didn't take them...
Yeah.
Well, let's say, like, the... The Hawks didn't take him sixth, right? It's like you're...
Honestly, though, if they would have taken him sixth, look, I don't know if I necessarily would have agreed at the time, but I think that my thoughts on this have changed enough to where I think, yes, like that's fine with me. Because if you're comparing him or Onyeka Okongwu, who we think is like a solid double, right? You can find Onyeka Okongwu's. You can't find Poku's if Poku hits. Like, if Poku hits, it's a 100x of what you paid for him. Even at 6, it's 75x what you paid for him over the course of the 6th overall pick in the first 4 years of his career. Like, to me, that's the kind of swing that you want in the draft. Like, that's how you win the draft, I think.
You definitely can win it that way, 1,000%. I just remember the videos and the clips of trying to find Poku stuff, and it was like he was playing against, like, us. Like, there was no barometer of talent of what he was doing. Like, he legitimately looked like a 7'1" Magic Johnson hybrid, but it's like I don't know who he's... I don't know who he's playing against. So because of that, it's just kind of hard to make that... I mean, it's hard for everybody regardless of who you draft, right? But like, that's it's still a wild... Well,
the Poku one
jump.
It's a totally different deal with the Poku one. Like, just the level of tape that was out there on that guy was just like, you had no idea. And by the way, it was the same with Giannis as well. Like, Giannis' tape was hilarious if you'd watch it at the time, too. And not to compare Poku and Giannis, Giannis just always had much better physical tools than what Poku had. But
if he misses, Tyrese Halliburton's good, though. You're just going to hear about that forever. Like, well, Tyrese Halliburton's there. We had a hole. Like, you didn't take him. You went too crazy at 6. Like, you do that later in the draft.
But to me, again, like, from a process perspective, like, I'm okay with going for swings at this point. I think that's where I'm at. Like, I think that you try to 50x, 100x your money in the draft. Like, there's just that's how you win the NBA draft. That's how Milwaukee changed the trajectory of their franchise through building in the NBA draft. They hit Giannis, right? That's how I'm trying to think of, like, other examples. That's how Denver hit. They drafted Nikola Jokic, who was 270 pounds and, like, overweight. But they had a first-round grade on him.
Sure, but
they probably would have taken him in the first had they had the pick.
In the 40s. Is this
enough? It's easier to take him in the 40s.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, take the swing. It sounds like...
Oklahoma City.
It sounds like you're on board with Josh Primo.
Oklahoma City with Russell Westbrook.
Say it. Josh Primo is the right pick. Do it. We're here.
Say it. Here's what I'll say. If I had a higher grade on Josh Primo, like, if I thought Josh Primo was really good, I totally agree with you. Like, your process in terms of evaluating where you had Josh Primo, I totally agree with taking him.
If I was that high on Primo, wrong. They took him. I was like, oh my God, this is wild. But he's been good. Reports are that he works. Everybody loves him. He's been in these tiny minutes. Like, throw out Primo, see what he does. Oh, he's 8 for 9 from the field. That was 18 points. And Spurs Twitter is going nuts. Like, we did it. We picked it. But that pick was crushed by a lot of people. And I could still be very wrong, but I credit that organization for taking that startup 100x, 50x swing to try to change everything.
And by the way, a prime example of this as well is the Russell Westbrook pick for the Oklahoma City Thunder. They thought that Russell Westbrook's athleticism translated to playing the lead guard position, despite the fact that if you go back and you watch his UCLA tape, like, he was the off guard defensive specialist, and they got proven right at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I think that's how you win. That's how you change the trajectory of your franchise. Like, there is not a big enough difference in terms of replacement value for, you know, X, Y, and Z player. Like, the difference between Sadiq Bey and signing Jeff Green to a 3-year, $15 million deal, Sadiq Bey is better, and it's better to have Sadiq Bey on a cheaper deal, but it's not going to make or break your season.
Correct.
It's not going to make or break your franchise.
Right. No, it's fair points. It is.
Yeah. That's where I'm at on the draft at this point. Draft philosophy rant over. Let's buzz through some of these upperclassmen that are returning, and then we'll take a quick commercial break. Okay. We're back. We're going to buzz through some upperclassmen, and then we'll buzz through some upside freshmen as well. Okay. First guy I have here is Kadari Richmond, who, friend of the Matt Penny side of the program, John Rothstein tweeted about yesterday, saying he looked very, very good when he was at Seton Hall practice. Kadari Richmond, his defensive numbers are off the charts. Like, not quite Matisse Thybulle level, but like very, very high level in terms of steal rate, in terms of block rate for a guard. Very good passer, playmaker for someone who is 6'5" with long arms. I really like him. I have a top 40 grade on him coming into the year.
I was lower on him last year. I know he's the draft Twitter darling, despite Syracuse, and it was just wasn't the right fit. We'll just leave it at that, right? Season didn't go as planned. He transferred. Sounds like Seton Hall's the right place. 45% from the field. He was only 7 for 21 from 3, 33%. Don't love the jumper. It is hitchy. I felt like the release points could vary. There's a slight hesitation at the top. Sometimes he shoots it too far in front of his face. All that being said, he does have handle. He can break down his guy. I like when he came off curls, screens to get downhill in the lane. He's very strong. He's physically imposing. He's going to get to where he wants to go. He can force it at times when he's a point. I think he's better as a combo. And ironically, his high school coach, Jason Smith, said everyone's wrong because everyone thought he's a wing. And he's kind of more of this type of point guard. He's just still far from being a finished product right now to contribute in the NBA. But also kind of an opportunity to give credit to Seton Hall and Kevin Willard, because he's as good as a player development coach as there is, in my opinion anyway. And they've produced, and he hasn't had a five-star guy since 2016, and they've won 20 games in five of the last 6 years. It's a better fit for him to kind of get where he needs to go by being there.
I think so, too, especially in terms of just NBA, you know, development and upside. Like, last year they went 14-13, still had a winning record in the Big East. They played a really tough out of conference, if I remember correctly. Probably would have won 20 games had they played like a normal out of conference last year. Overall, Kevin Willard, I think, has been really, really impressive. And by the way, like, what really stinks about Kevin Willard not necessarily getting the respect that he might deserve is that year the NCAA tournament got thrown out, that's probably his best team.
Or they 21-9 or something like that. They were good.
In 13-5 in the Big East and top 20 in KenPom, slated for like a top 3 or 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, they were really good that year, and it's a bummer that we didn't get to see them you know, just scratch and claw and have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. But what can you do? Next up, let's go with, I don't know, which one of this? Let's go Andre Curbelo. What do you think of Andre Curbelo?
I love Andre Curbelo as a watch. He's definitely one of my favorite watches because he's got stones. I mean, he's unafraid. You throw him out there, he'd come off the bench, just like run around crazy, and he is a momentum shift. I really like the way he places passes out of pick and roll to shooters or rollers. Then he fed the post really well to Kofi Coburn with these strange kind of angles and steps through. It's almost like an instructional video on how to feed the post, which you don't see a lot these days. Just he has to make the game up tempo, and that's where he thrives, when he's able to keep the defenses guessing with his handle and his dribble moves. Now, the negatives are he has to tighten up some of the looseness of his game without losing the flair. It's like you don't want to pull him all the way back because that's what makes him who he is. At the same time, you know, when you're 6'1" and he shot 16% from three, 5 for 31,
yeah,
had 4.2 assists to 2.6 turnovers, it's hard to make in the NBA with statistically with what that is, regardless of how good the tape may be.
So yeah, it's just really hard to make it in the NBA when you're 6'1", skinny, and can't shoot. That's just what it comes down to for me for Curbelo. Like, I believe in all of the distribution, passing, flair, creativity as a ball handler, the way he knows how to run a team, the way he knows how to run a team in transition, the way he organizes a team in the half court. I think all that stuff is very high level. It's almost impossible to be an NBA point guard at 6'1" who just can't shoot. Like he is a non-shooter right now. Just that, oh, like he has a developing, burgeoning shot. No, he's like a non-shooter at the moment. I'm a little bit lower on him than consensus coming into the year, acknowledging that it could end up being that Curbelo is a player who kind of skies up my board because he has some tools in terms of the way he thinks of the game, in terms of his creative mindset, that you can't teach at the end of the day.
There are those unteachable things. A lot of people were shocked, and I can't believe we're talking so much Sharif Cooper here on this program. When he kind of took that tumble, it didn't completely surprise me when you start doing the math of smaller guards who can't shoot, and he shot it probably a little bit better than Curbelo did too, a little bit better out of pick and roll. So if that's where his range was, and you're seeing it kind of play out, he still needs to kind of advance, and he could come back and really shoot it. Maybe that bumps him up a little bit. He'll be great in college. The NBA still has a little bit of time to go.
Okay, Iverson Molinar is next. You look at Iverson Molinar's numbers, and I've talked to some NBA teams, some agents that have looked through all of the numbers for NBA prospects this year, and Molinar is a guy that has really stood out. 48% from the field, 44 from three, 80 from the line. Very few guards across the NBA 2022 NBA draft cycle can really even come close to matching that. Averaged 17 points a game. He's not like a primary distributor necessarily, no, but he is someone that just can score and can really shoot and can get to the bucket. Like, he's a legit three-level scorer.
He had 7 games, 20 or more points. And in his game, he has a real balance on his catch and his step back and getting to his jumper. And also another change of pace guy where he'll lull his man to sleep a bit and then has a decent burst on his first step. And he's not afraid to pull up from three if and when his man kind of is slow to react or goes under. He definitely has to see the floor better, especially when he comes off screens and catch. He's another guy that he's catching to score. And because of that, yep, he'll force some tough ones in the lane at times where he's kind of hoping to get bailed out for a foul and won't dump it off. Almost a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. And I do like the roster, too, at Mississippi State with Rocket Watts transferring, Garrison Brooks, Shaquille Moore. It'll be another team that I didn't watch a ton of last year, but now, based on his numbers and their personnel, I'll certainly be watching them a lot more this season.
I have him as like a clear second round grade that wouldn't totally stun me if he has like a blow up year.
Yeah.
This year. Yeah. Let's go Jordan Hall. We held off on Jordan Hall last time at St. Joe's. Guy that considered going through with the 2021 NBA draft. Interesting player insofar as a lot of feel for the game as a passer at 6'8". real creativity, real court vision, real flair. Again, one of these like pass first guys. Better passer, or better, not quite the passer that Andre Curbelo is, but a much better shooter. Like, if he has his feet set and it's off the catch, I feel pretty okay about Jordan Hall shooting the basketball. I don't know if, like, the glue is there to his game right now. Like, I feel like he doesn't really move when he doesn't have the ball. And, like, I feel his defensive game is just very non, there's not a lot of intent to his defensive game, and that those things combine to worry me pretty substantially.
It does, and his turnover number needs to be reeled in. I mean, he had almost three turnovers a game. He handled the ball a lot, and he again, just some wild reads at times that result in turnovers, which I think are fixable. What I do like about him is that he's much better, despite trying to be point guard at times, as like a side isolation scorer. His value is doing that kind of secondary creator from the wing and not necessarily having the ball in his hands to start the offense every play. And he's better when he gets those small players on an island, and he's 6'8" and can go one-on-one. When it gets congested in the lane, the roles, it doesn't really help him, because when he doesn't have really that first quick step, we're turning the corner. But there's also what St. Joe's did was, there's intrigue for me as he can kind of come off screens or also be a screener and then pop and force the defense to scramble a little bit. Like, that's the type of offensive role, I guess, flexibility that appeals to NBA teams. So he can start, receive that dribble handoff, can lead the break and trail it. He ripped through the Atlantic 10 last year and just wasn't the same against the big boys in Auburn, Kansas, and Tennessee. Just have to see him perform more consistently against a higher level of competition.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. A guy that has performed in higher levels of competition, who was a big numbers player last year, I really like Kendrick Davis quite a bit at SMU. Like, he's small, I get it. He's like 5'11", he's probably 185 pounds. He isn't like the most comfortable shooter right now, I would say. Like, I think that there is room for him to take more shots coming off of screens. But man, just maybe the most fun guy to watch in terms of running an offense, distributing, like getting everyone involved, all of that stuff. Like, he is so good.
Yeah, we're saying distributing. He averaged close to 8 assists per game. He's productive at what he does, and he, at 5'11", doesn't scare him either. And point blank, like, he's a scorer. He is. And he uses a lot of moves to free himself, because he has to, because he's a little bit smaller. And it's impressive because he's fast, but not necessarily, like, super quick either in one-on-one in the half court. So that's, like, kind of what, like, as an evaluator, it's a little bit tougher. And his moves start mostly with ball screens. It's not, like, a lot of clear out, we're going 1-4, we're going top isolation. Does have that tight handle. Yeah. He's very tough. There's no quit to what he does. Not discouraged when he's blocked the lane. We've said this a lot about smaller guards. It's translation. It just scares me a little bit. It's sort of like that Max A. Smith, in a sense. Like, you're going to get your points in college, but at 5'11", is that same style going to work in with the big boys in the NBA?
Why is Kendrick Davis not better than Max A. Smith?
Well, in what sense?
He is, like, a much, much better distributor. Like, not even remotely close, in my opinion. 3-to-1 assist turnover ratio. I think he led did he lead the NCAA in assists last year?
Looked on off the top of my head.
Finished third in the NCAA in assists last year. Real distributor, playmaker, passer. Averaged 19 points a game. Can hit shots, like, needs to be more comfortable taking shots from distance, but hit 37% from three on 4 3-point attempts per game. Terrific driver, attack-oriented player, high usage in a similar way to A. Smith. I think he's just a better player. Like, I really just kind of think he's a better player. He's more physical at the point of attack defensively. Like, I get that Max had the crazy run that got him on the radar of every NBA evaluator and everyone in the nation, because the Oral Roberts run was so great to watch. I just kind of think that Kendrick Davis is actually the better player.
More well-rounded. I mean, A. Smith did shoot 40, 48, 43, 89. So percentages better in that department, but I think Kendrick Davis probably gives you a little bit more.
Yeah, like he's a better all around player. Like he just does, he does more while not necessarily being like, he's not a scoring liability. Like he averaged 19 points a game on a 58 true shooting percentage last year. Yep. Max Asemus averaged in a worse league, by the way, in the Summit League, averaged I think 24 a game on a 63 true shooting percentage. So he's a better scorer. Like you're not going to see me deny that, but like, I just kind of think that defensively, Kendrick Davis is better. As a distributor, it's just like night and day. It's not even remotely close. I think I'd rather have Kendrick Davis, I guess, than Max Asemus. And we can transition this into talking about Asemus. Asemus is an incredible pull-up shooter. He's kind of a one-trick pony right now who gets an immense amount of help by playing in an Oral Roberts scheme that is the closest thing to an NBA scheme that you will like basically see in low level college basketball. Like he has free reign with an incredibly well spaced floor to pull up from 35 and in.
And with Max at Oral Roberts, he did have that setup with Kevin O'Banner and those high pick and rolls the whole time. And now he's gone. So I'm kind of interested to see what it looks like life after him too, when you don't necessarily have that high ball screen for a guy who also averages like 20 points per game.
Yeah, I think that's a significant worry as well. I want to see what Max looks like this year at Oral Roberts. Like I just don't know. He was not good at the what do you call that? The NBA draft combine. Yeah. That's where he was. Yeah, the NBA draft combine. He was not very good when he was there, unfortunately, which is a bummer because I think there's some real shooting potential at least, but and it was a great story. I'm just not sure he's like up to the standard, even though like he's a great scheme player within what Oral Roberts wants to do. Caleb Love, like real quick, we should talk about him. Interesting player for sure. Had a terrible year in North Carolina. Yeah. Like legitimately maybe the worst year in terms of efficiency of any guard that has entered college basketball in recent years.
Yeah, I don't know if I was just wrong with him coming out of high school. Can he turn this thing around now in year two in Chapel Hill? The half court and slower tempo game seem to be his nemesis. He has to get downhill and play fast. And there's still opportunity for him in the backcourt. Like, he can right the ship. Just there were some bad stretches freshman year.
Yeah, I feel like he needs to knock down shots as much as anything, like, first and foremost. Like, he was a terrible shooter last year, and that's not really who he is. Like, any time that he played at lower levels, like, he was a pretty good shooter. So I'm expecting a better year. He has a long way to go. Like, it's a long road back for him.
He's probably more of a scoring two guard than a real point, but the shot wasn't there, so there's still a lot of questions. I mean, shoot 30% from the field and 26% from three. It's not great.
Yeah. It's just hard to like say much about like evaluating him because last year was so bad. Like, this is a five-star kid coming into North Carolina, got the keys to the offense, and just was terrible. Like, I felt bad like watching him
a lot of the time
because it just wasn't even close to the standard. So I don't know. Javon Quinterly, on the other hand, had a great year for Alabama last year. Came off the bench for a long portion of the season, basically throughout all of SEC play, and was just a ridiculous scorer. He was so good last year. He averaged 13 points, 46 from the field, 50 from three, 70 from the line. So creative off the bounce. He was the SEC tournament MVP. He's such a creative force, just an absolute force of making things happen due to how tight his handle is, how much shake he has, his change of pace, like all of it. Like he has all of that stuff down as an NBA player. He's just 6'1", 175 pounds, and does not have a great defensive mindset at this point.
And turns 23 in November and is technically a sophomore based on the extra eligibility year. So the NBA clock is ticking there too. Like Herb Jones had age concerns, and he was a senior, and they're a month apart in birthdays. He'll be a leader on that team. He did shoot 43% from three last season on 74 attempts. He is smart at using different angles of attack and release points at the rim, but yeah, I mean, there's times when he drives and he seems to be amongst the trees a little bit with a lack of athleticism. So I like him. It's a great redemptive story after everything he went through with Arizona. He transferred from Villanova, but the age thing doesn't help him much.
Yeah, ended up like decommitting from Arizona and going to Villanova, right? Yes. If I remember correctly. Yeah. Just a tough situation. I'm glad that he's found success, and he's a real shot to be like an NBA backup point guard. Just would need to continue shooting 44% from three, I think, to do so.
Yeah, which is tough to do. That's a good number.
Yeah, tough.
It was 74 attempts. Tough life. I mean, I think he's going to take more than that this year, and he'll still split time. I don't think it's time, but kind of like the role with JD Davidson, and I think the next guy we're going to talk about here. So he'll have a chance. He'll have a shot.
Wait, who's the next guy we're talking about?
Did we talk about...
Do you want to talk about Jaden Shackelford?
Oh, no. I thought we were going the Keon Ellis experiment.
Oh, we can... So, Keon Ellis is, like, more of a wing. Yeah, I've heard great things about Keon Ellis so far. Like, I want to be clear about that. Like, really good defensive mindset, can really shoot. They were just loaded last year on the wing, and he didn't get as much time. But I think Keon Ellis is going to have an absolute breakout year this year for Alabama. Any scout that's been down there thinks he's like a pretty real prospect.
Yeah, more of like the three conversation, but we talk about him now and sort of role and backcourt wing-ish. I probably just had to mention him a little bit.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we mentioned him. Adam Flagler averaged 16 points a game as a freshman at Presbyterian. Came to Baylor last year, was a critical bench guard for them, averaged 9 points a game, 45 from the field, 43 from three, 87 from the line. Just a ridiculous shooter who I think is going to have the keys to Baylor's offense. I think he's their leading scorer this year, and I think he's a real NBA prospect. Tell me I'm wrong about Adam Flagler, Matt.
I don't know if you are going back and watching him, because he definitely knew his role last year, and when he transferred from Presbyterian, he took 275 threes as a freshman, and then he took 106 as a sophomore at Baylor. They won a national championship, and his numbers really pop. I mean, if you go on Synergy, he's in the 99th percentile in spot-up shooting, 99th percentile in catch-and-shoot, and 96% in all the jump shots. The release is high. It's pretty quick. He works away from the ball and coming off screens. He's smart on back cuts and flares where his man's misplaying him. He'll step in and hit some floaters. He was better on film than I kind of remembered watching him live during last year. So I'm on board with the Adam Flagler breakout experiment.
Adam Flagler, top 45 pick, I think, is where I'm at. I think that I don't know if he comes out this year even necessarily. Like, he might end up just doing what Jared Butler did, like averaging 16 points a game and then returning for his like junior season or whatever. I actually don't necessarily know how old he is, but he has an NBA skill set in terms of his ability to score the basketball.
Yeah, you always need shooters. Always need floor spacers.
Okay. Do we want to run through like a few of the high upside freshmen? Like, people are probably yelling at us that we haven't talked about Nolan Hickman yet. I just haven't seen enough of him to like really have a take yet. Like, he's probably my biggest blind spot right now in the recruiting class. I just haven't seen a lot of him.
Yeah, Gonzaga's a really... I tweeted this the other day. It's just crowded in that backcourt. It'll be a little less crowded with Dominic Harris getting injured. But for Hickman... Washington native, he attended Wasatch Academy. He actually committed to Kentucky before backing off the pledge, and committing to Gonzaga. He will be back there with Andrew Nembhard and Hunter Salas and even Rasir Bolton, who transferred. Hickman, 6'2", has a +3 or +4 wingspan. I really like the way he attacks and plays with pick and roll. He can split the defense. He can spin. He can find different offensive options coming off of that. Very poised, very under control. It's kind of hard to speed him up. And already has that NBA pace of playing with five gears and not going as fast as he can all the time. Goes slow, then speed guys up. I tried to get as much as I could from that Gonzaga sort of Midnight Madness scrimmage practice, which was tough to do. Want to see how it looks with Timmy and Holmgren in the front court, and Julian Strother's going to break out year. And we talked about Hunter Salas, Rasir Bolton, Nembhard. There's a lot of tools there for them to play with, too.
Yeah, I just don't know the way that whole backcourt is going to shake out. Like, we should also talk about Andrew Nembhard, I guess, here, too. He's been a player that long has hoped his future lies in the NBA, as many do. He was invited to the first G League Elite camp and didn't really perform well there. I just worry that he might not have enough juice as an athlete, unfortunately, to make it work at the NBA level. But great decision maker, great passer, and I would expect that he will run the show quite a bit for Gonzaga this year, too.
Yeah, steady. You trust him. I mean, his numbers all dipped from the transfer from Florida, but he cut his turnovers in half. So I feel like that team will give him the ball and kind of let him set the table for everybody else. Not as high draft stuff, but higher as a college player, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right, and I think that, like, Mark Few isn't going to complain about that, right? Like, he's probably ecstatic that, yeah, he's got a great college player. Let's finish on Hunter Salas before moving on there. I always saw Hunter Salas more as, like, a four-star prospect that was a multi-year guy as opposed to, like, a super high-level five-star. I think he's a multi-year guy at Gonzaga. Like, I think he's pretty good, and it's probably just going to take a little bit of time for him to adjust to the increase in competition level.
He could. He's 6'4", 6'8", wingspan, still kind of all arms and legs and growing into his body. Really solid all-around game. I mean, he will search for dunks in the middle of traffic, and not this super, super athlete yet through contact, and not a super shooter, so he kind of needs, like, a little fine-tuning. And I did see he won the Gonzaga dunk contest and didn't seem intimidated in the scrimmage I was trying to get anything from. It'll be adjustment to high-level basketball, as shown with his kind of performance at the Iverson Classic, the All-Star game. He was fine, but it wasn't this guy and recruit as his sort of being billed. I'm buying stock. I just don't necessarily know if it'll be right here, right now, as a freshman.
Yeah, I'm definitely buying stock long term. Like, he's an NBA player long term, but like you said, like, he has to grow into his body. He has to continue to improve as a jumper, and he has to continue to improve the jumper, yeah. Not as a jumper. As a jump shooter, he needs to continue to improve. And we'll see what it looks like at the end of the year, right? Like, I think he's going to be a really, really good player, and it could probably help him to get a second year at Gonzaga.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of the guys who are going to take prominence, and he's not going to necessarily have the opportunity to be the dude. I don't think that Gonzaga is going to play him in these, like, stretches where he's going to show necessarily enough, because they're going to try to win games.
The final guy I have on my list here is Aminu Muhammad. Another player I just haven't seen a lot of. Like, I will, like, just cede the floor to you as someone who lives more in the grassroots space. Like, I've just seen very, very little of him and don't really even feel comfortable giving it to him.
No, thanks. So, native of Nigeria, he came to the United States at age 14, and he actually started playing with DC Premier on the Under Armour circuit, so I've seen him for a long time. And then he transferred to a small high school in Missouri and put up these, like, ridiculous numbers where he was able to do whatever he wanted, and it looked like one of those Zion Williamson high school videos where he's just torturing the other team. It's like, who was this player? His offense is very raw and it can be a little bit of a bull in a china shop, but he plays super hard. He's very aggressive, all of the court finishing, diving around, finding ways to leave his impact. I really like him as a defender, sort of like that pit bull lockdown type of defender. Made a lot of fans at the Elite 100 a few years ago when NBA scouts were there. Just what we said sort of about playing consistent high-level basketball like JD Davidson might just take a little bit of time to transition from high school to college.
Okay, anyone else you want to talk about?
Are we talking freshmen or generally speaking?
Generally speaking, I think that we've, like, gone through, like, 20 guys. I don't know that.
Adam Miller, I'm hoping he has a little bit of a bounce back at LSU. He had a good summer with USAB. Who else? Let me see here as I scroll. Avery Anderson, what's your take on him?
just a scorer jump shooter right now. Definitely a bit older from what I remember, too. Very skinny. I hadn't really even thought about him much as an NBA player, to be honest.
Okay. And what about the other one, Isaiah Wong, Miami?
Yeah, have thought about him a little bit more. Really interesting player just because of the creativity off the bounce. Like, he can get to his shot whenever he wants. I think he just has to be a higher level shooter at the end of the day.
Yeah, had some big games. More of a scoring lead guard at 6'3". Had 7 points per game as a freshman, up to 17 points per game as a sophomore. 35% shooter from three. Filled it up some games. 30 against Louisville. 29 against Florida State, 28 against Clemson. Very good at pick and roll, but yeah, just need to shoot a little bit better.
Tyson Etienne was the AAC Player of the Year last year. I guess we should mention him. Just a really high-level pull-up shooter and shot creator. I don't know if there's much else there for me.
Well, that's good. That's a good thing to be Player of the Year. I mean, that's a good start.
Yeah, totally. Like, I don't mean to discount him. Like, he's a really, really effective player on the college level. I just, in terms of his NBA upside, like, he'd really need to be, like, a super high-level shooter, I think, to be that guy.
Yeah, and declared, went back to school, didn't get necessarily the feedback he wanted, and all reports are that he's working harder. He's going to be the leader of that team. Has to improve shot selection for sure. He shot 37% of the field, can get a little crazy out there, but it seems like he's playing with a greater sense of confidence after declaring, coming back, knowing what he has to work on.
Yeah, maybe the last guy we should mention is Jalen Worley Florida like State. I do too. Really, really creative combo guard, like definitely a combo, not really a point. But really, really creative off the bounce, has great change of pace, great change of direction. Like, Florida State obviously spreads it out a little bit more, but and he's probably more of a two-year guy because from what I've seen, the frame is going to take some time to develop. But overall, I think that, you know, real potential NBA player for sure.
6'5". He grew 6 inches in high school. He is confident in his game. He gets in the lane. He dictates pace. Need him to have a little bit more takeover to him. He didn't quite make the jump from his junior to senior year, as I thought. But I do like the tools, and he's kind of the athletic gifts are catching up to his body. So when he puts it all together, he's going to be even a different player than he is right now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, too. Okay. That's all I've got in terms of basketball stuff. Have you should we talk about the Chestnut Man here?
Oh, we can do Chestnut Man.
You convinced me to watch Chestnut Man
or Squid Game, but I can definitely do Chestnut Man.
I still haven't watched Squid Game.
Oh my gosh. I thought I was late to the party. I finished like 3 days ago.
Yeah, I know. It's bad. I'm going to try and watch this week / weekend, but I keep like running out of time to do things. Like me diving into Boston,
I'm like a Boston culture, now. I have no time for anything
realistically
else.
Right now. Yeah, I'm a Boston guy, basically. No, I'm reading The Friends of Eddie Coyle, which is like one of the most famous Boston books ever. Yeah. So this is where we're at. Like, how am I supposed to find time to watch Squid Game when I'm diving so deep into Boston culture?
Yeah, it's a fair point. Well, how did I find time to watch Chestnut Man, which is a Danish crime thriller? And this is where you rubbed off on me, that I watched a dubbed Danish crime thriller on Netflix and actually recommended it to you.
It's so good. I really enjoyed it. I really, really loved it.
Why is their TV so dark, though? So dark.
Oh,
they just don't
Scandinavian
care. Like, oh,
TV.
It's dead. This person dead. This person. I'm like, oh, can we slow down for an episode? It's like, no, we actually just crank it up.
Speaking of dark, by the way, I watched what the fuck is this movie called? It's a New Zealand movie. It's called Coming Home in the Dark. Oh, I loved it. Like, I thought it was so good. I thought that, like, I have not watched a movie that surprised me as much as that one did. And I thought it was just a really interesting, almost really interesting take on the idea of like the revenge genre of films.
Right.
And holy shit, is it dark, Penny?
Like, well, if I mean, the Chestnut Man, I won't give too much away, but like the first episode, it's a lot, but you power through it, and I was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Sam might watch it and say, like, that was too much for me. There's the whatever. So I woke up till one morning. He had a, because our time's all messed up, whatever. He said, yeah, Laura and I watched it. We're in. We love it. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
I guess I've nailed your style of cinema.
Yeah, you really have. Like, you understand me so well, Deeds. You know me all too well, Deeds. Yeah, I mean, I'm just ready to get back to movie theaters at this point. That's what I need. But until then, I'm going to keep watching movies like There's Someone Inside Your House, the Netflix movie
about high school kids. I watched the preview, and I did the Rotten Tomatoes test. I said, let me look and make sure it's over like 60%. And it was. And I said, I don't know if I can do this right now.
Hey, I mean, look, like, I completely forgot about it the moment after I watched it, basically, but it's like fine. Like, it's relatively enjoyable, you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing wrong with it.
Are we in on the reboots? Are we going to be in on the reboots of I Know What You Did Last Summer, Scream 76 that's coming out? Where are we staying on those?
Wait, what? There's a Scream reboot?
I think so.
There's a Halloween. There's another Halloween movie, I know. Is there really another Scream reboot?
I thought my buddy texted that. Scream Returns, People, 35 hours ago. Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, and David Arquette are back in new trailer.
Oh, my. Penny, I don't know if you knew this, but I am, like, Scream is like one of my favorite movies.
I wrote Scream.
Yeah. Like, just straight up.
Oh, the
you wrote Scream?
I was joking, like you did. That was your prior life. Like, I don't know if you know this, but I wrote Matt Scream Penny, 3.
Matt Penny, the screenwriter of Scream.
Yeah, it would be the first one, Scream 3. I love Scream 1 and 2. 1 and 2 is not bad. It went off the deep end, the deepest of deep ends. But Scream 5, everything's a franchise, an action superhero movie or a reboot. So we always net back out here.
Oh my God. January 2022. 100% in, Penny.
Will you be in, like, a movie theater by then? That's the question. You can't watch that at home. That's a movie theater watch.
Oh, yeah. Laura and I will go to the movie theater, like, day that comes out and see that movie. I really need Jeremiah Robinson Earl as well to stop, like, making shots. That would be nice. We were within 4 with the Nuggets, and then Robinson Earl made a jumper, and then he, like, made a little, like, floater layup kind of thing. God damn it.
You come to game theory, you know what you're going to get. Preseason betting, Scream 5, breaking news, here's 100 guards we don't know what to do with. Something for everybody.
Yeah, that's the life. Yes. That's the game theory life at this point. We hope that, like, I hope college basketball fans are getting something out of these, like, NBA draft previews as well. Like, I feel like we're, like, you know, throwing out some intel. I feel like we're talking about teams as well as just players, right?
Yeah, a little bit. We're covering a lot of ground.
Covering a lot of ground. That's the way to put it. Again, the game theory corollary, covering a lot of ground. But by the way, do you know, have you seen the score of the Dallas-Charlotte preseason game?
I haven't, because the way I podcast and set up, I'm just like staring at my closet. So unless something pops up here, I won't see it.
Dallas beat Charlotte 127-59.
Yeah, I did say before we started recording that Charlotte had 35 points in like the third or fourth quarter.
Yikes. Yeah, that's a rough go. Boys, sorry about that. Carlique Jones might not be bad, by the way. That's one that I'm intrigued by in the preseason.
Well, preseason, we have to take it all with a grain of salt, but the guys are playing well. At least they're kind of covering up their role, their niche a little bit.
Okay. Penny, tell the people where the people can find you online. That was fucking horrible English. I'm tired. It's like 1 o'clock in the afternoon here. Come on.
It's 10 o'clock here. So, Matt _ Penny on Twitter. I'll try to keep everyone abreast with the latest Scream 5 updates as they become available to me.
We might be doing like a Scream 5 update. We might be doing like a Scream rewatch on this podcast. I mean, yeah. Robbie Calland has already called a Game Night rewatch. Have you seen Game Night?
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's so good. I think it's like one of the most underrated comedies of the last decade. It's not Scream. It's not Scream, but it's good. This has been the Game Theory Podcast. Please remember, rate, review, subscribe, do everything you can to support the show. We will be back next week at some point, maybe even like this weekend. I really don't know at this point. Whenever interesting NBA stuff happens, like with the Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons stuff, I will record, basically. And then next week, the NBA season starts. So we will definitely have quite a bit of content coming at that point, because we're going to do opening night stuff. We're going to do X, Y, and Z on the NBA season. So keep it locked here. But until next time, we will talk soon. Bye.